Subscribe to the Writer's Block Podcast with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. They are rewriting afternoon sports radio one word at a time. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, well, finally, we're done with those seeding games. Finally, we can get around to what, for the Toronto Raptors, at least, will be meaningful basketball. Richard Deitch alongside me virtually for Writer's Block. Eric Smith, our Raptors radio voice on Sportsnet 590. The Fan will join us in a few minutes. Richard, the Raptors beating the Denver Nuggets 117-109. They went 7-1 in the bubble, second best record in the NBA bubble. The Suns went 8-0. Didn't matter. They didn't get into the play-in game in the West. That'll be Portland taking on the Memphis Grizzlies. We'll talk to Eric about that a little later, because I think Portland has kind of emerged as a real story here. I see that our very good friend Charles Barkley says if Portland beats Memphis, they will knock off the Lakers in the first round. But we'll talk to Eric about that. 117-109 for the Raptors. Paul Watson got a lot of playing time. Stanley Johnson. I mean, Richard, this was, you know, these past couple of games for the Raptors have really been an opportunity, I think, just for guys to make their case to Nick Nurse for the, what, 1.5 minutes a night that may be available to them if something goes wrong for the Raptors?
Well, so, Jeff, there's a couple things here, and good to be with you for our abbreviated edition. The lead up to the postseason games could not have gone better. If we take ourselves a couple weeks ago and you looked at the Raptors' schedule, among the hardest of any of the teams in the bubble, I think people would have been okay with a 4-4 record or something like that if they could have gotten the second seed. 7-1, including getting your backups a ton of time. Everybody's healthy, so you know, check every single box in terms of what you mm-hmm. wanted. They have it. Secondly, and again, I think there's so much of an unknown, Jeff, as to what these games inside the bubble for the postseason are going to be, because whatever kind of play you've seen so far, ratchet up the intensity massively starting next week. So very possible, Jeff, that guys who have only been back for a short amount of time, somebody sprains an ankle, somebody gets hurt. So that seventh, eighth, ninth person on the bench could conceivably get far more court time during this little postseason run than in years past. So whether you're a Matt Thomas or a Chris Boucher, I don't know if you're going to get as deep as Stanley Johnson, but I think what Nick Nurse and company were able to do over the last couple of days is going to pay dividends, because whether it's foul trouble or whether it's injuries, I think you're going to see at least in one game, one of these eighth, ninth, or tenth guys get more playing time when it matters than you might expect, and I think they're all going to be sharper for what we saw. And then just lastly, for a guy, let's just take a guy like Stanley Johnson, who's been buried on the bench all year round. Great for him, because, you know, other teams are going to watch him today. He gets some PTP, and maybe that helps him get signed next year, because it's a team option for the Raptors, and I don't think he would be coming back. So, again, credit to Nick Nurse and Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster. This 8-game stretch, Jeff, could not have gone better. They had one clunker, and everything else worked out great.
Yeah, we had a chance to chat with Michael Grange a little earlier in this whole thing, and I am with Michael on this. I think if we're getting to the point where we're seeing some of the combinations we saw on the court today, things ain't going well for the Raptors.
Correct. Yeah.
Like, you know, to me, the guy that I've seen in the bubble that, to my way of thinking, has, I don't know if I'd say he's played himself into more consideration, but given the way the NBA has gone, to me, it's Matt Thomas. I think Matt Thomas, and we talked about Matt Thomas very early in the get-go. I think we both agreed that this could be found money for the Raptors, because dude can shoot. Dude is completely unafraid of shooting, and I think that's like that's the guy I saw in the bubble that made me think, all right, you've gone up. Like, Norm is Norm. I think Rondé Hollis Jefferson, his hustle is just it can be an important aspect.
That's his game.
Yeah, but when I saw Matt Thomas playing the way he did, to me that sets up Matt Thomas for a significant role. The other guys, it was great, but
I thought Boucher. I mean, if the one thing about Chris Boucher, and I agree with you on Matt Thomas. Like, to me, 7-8 minutes, you can run a couple threes for him if you want to sort of stay close or if you're looking to extend the lead. He's not a very good defender, but he's gotten better enough where he's not the worst liability. I will say this: the guy who also stood out to me was Boucher, and I'll just tell you why. If Chris Boucher can hit any kind of three-pointers, Jeff, in a game that matters, that's a really nasty matchup for the opposition, because at 6'11", you have to make a decision, like, what are you going to do with your size defenders or post defenders? So if you have to respect Chris Boucher from shooting from the outside, just sort of do the math on this. The rest of the court opens up and should give you more advantage down low. So that was the other guy to me. I always feel like Boucher is going to play well defensively, but if that guy's range extends as a bench player, that's another guy I feel like Nick should feel comfortable playing 7-9 minutes if the moment calls for it.
And I think the other takeaway from the Raptors in the bubble, and both Eric and Paul alluded to this, like, we know what Brooklyn is all about. Brooklyn is going to, and Paul made the point, and credit Kenny Atkinson with installing this attitude before he was fired. Brooklyn is going to come at you. They're going to play hard. They do not have the talent anywhere near the Raptors. Next year, different situation when they've got everybody healthy. But you know that part of the Brooklyn Nets DNA is get in your face, play hard. And this may be one of those series where I think the Raptors are probably going to, they may run the table in this series. But the games may get a little nasty. Somebody may get in foul trouble early, and you may need one of these guys, whether it's game two or game three, to haul, to put up 10 minutes. I mean, you just might, because you know what you're going to face from the Nets. They are going to be in your face, and they are just going to flat out try to make life miserable for you. And the other thing, and you talked about this a lot too, Richard, I'm looking ahead to the Miami Heat. That could very easily, if the Raptors end up playing the Heat, that could be at some point a war of attrition. So you're going to need guys.
Well, I will say this, Jeff. I watched that Trailblazers-Nets game. Could not be more impressed with the Nets. They had no reason to play that game hard. They played them basically down to the last 2 minutes. The Trailblazers had to bail themselves out to continue on in the bubble. Caris LeVert was awesome. Guy looked like an all-star basically last night. Mm-hmm. So that team is not going to lay down. Now, the Raptors should beat them. They're a far more talented team. The Nets, honestly, I don't think have enough scoring to play with the Raptors, but it's you saw last night that they're not going to just show up. And I actually think that's pretty good, like, for the Raptors, because I think that should, and again, we'll see how these games play out, but I think that should give them an edge, Jeff, for the second round. Like, when I say edge, not meaning they're going to win, but edge is in like a mental edge, like they're going to be razor sharp. Because the Nets are going to test them a little bit, at least during different times of the game. So I'm with you. Kenny Atkinson instilled some kind of culture or POV on that team, and those guys played. I mean, honestly, they had nothing to play for last night, and they played hard. They made the Trailblazers sweat and have to earn that playoff spot.
And I'll tell you, the guy that really impressed me for them, obviously, Caris LeVert has been terrific. But man, Jared Allen,
he was awesome.
Yeah, I don't know how much he weighs now. He's put on, I swear to God, he put muscle on over the pandemic break. And he was a handful for Portland. And you're right. They don't have the skill to match the Raptors. But they are going to be energized. And again, they will play hard. And that's Brooklyn Nets basketball. They will play hard, and they're in a dangerous, they don't even have a chip in their shoulder, Richard. They just don't. I wouldn't say they're necessarily happy to be here, but they're certainly happy to be playing the defending champs in the first round.
Yeah. And I keep in mind, Jeff, other than Caris LeVert, obviously, who I think will certainly be a major figure with the Nets next year, all of those guys are playing for minutes next year. They know Kyrie's coming back. They know Kevin Durant's coming back. They know Spencer Dinwiddie's coming back. So the guys on the Nets are playing for jobs, which is a pretty good motivator. To me, the Nets would be, I think, a very dangerous team if they were playing a club that is not professional and does not take every game seriously. So, interestingly enough, the Raptors are a bad matchup for the Nets because the Raptors will not take them for granted. If the Nets were going in against a high seed let's put it this way. Like, I think that, the Nets would be a much tougher matchup for a team like the Lakers, who I think can sometimes coast a little bit on talent, versus the Raptors, who I think will work every possession. And lastly on this, while the second round of the NBA playoffs to me is like really the round to pay attention to, I will be paying huge attention to the other teams in the Eastern Conference just to see what happens with the Sixers and the Celtics and the Heat and the Pacers. If you're a Raptors fan, pay attention to those series, because the second round, you're going to be playing a really good team no matter what. And, you know, I'll be curious to see how those other teams and how those other series go. If, whether it's the Heat or the Bucks, if they're able to dismiss their opponents quickly, or if some of those first round series get a little tricky.
I don't have a good read on the Bucks, Richard.
How can you?
I think I have a decent read in the Heat. And I also, I have enough of a historical reference point to realize that the Heat and Raptors is a completely different matchup than the Heat and anybody else. But I do not know what to make of Milwaukee. They haven't had a great deal to play for, but I have been surprised comparing how they have acquitted themselves and handled themselves in the bubble compared to the way the Raptors have acquitted themselves and handled themselves in the bubble. And it really surprised me. And I know it's a small, small detail, but man, what was Giannis Antetokounmpo doing getting kicked out for headbutt? Where does that come from?
Yeah, no, it's
that was scary.
And then lastly, he's obviously a phenomenal player, but there is no player on the Raptors, Jeff, who faces individual pressure the way Giannis does in Milwaukee. I mean, the playoffs in the Eastern Conference are, I mean, just let's be honest. It's a referendum on Giannis.
Yes,
in terms of can he take the Bucks to the finals. There's storylines all over the place. I mean, in the Western Conference, there is sort of a sense of can a team sort of gel with like a push button the way the Clippers, I think, hope to. They haven't sort of had their whole team there. Obviously, what does LeBron and Anthony Davis mean in a playoffs? But the East really, to me, is about, are the Bucks for real? And is Giannis does he deserve to be in the conversation of like one of the two or three most impactful players in the league? And fair or not, at a certain point, you have to, if you want that title, you have to take your team to the finals, and probably at a certain point you have to win a final. Right. So it's a big referendum on him. And in looking at the Bucks during the bubble, Jeff, they were just odd. Like one game they play against the Heat, they look like world beaters. Then there's a game like against like the Mavericks or something like that where they can't finish the job. I'm with you. And they're not going to lose in the first round, but I don't know what they are after the first round. We'll learn that pretty soon.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. You know, one of the things that going to the finals, not even winning the NBA championship, but I think one of the things that going to the finals did for the Raptors last year was it took the sort of that pressure off them, and it put it squarely on the Bucks. You know, now the Bucks are the team that hasn't been able to get over the hump. And, you're right. This is great. Players are going to be under the microscope and have been under the microscope in this bubble. I think you would agree more than in a regular setting. There's been a lot of attention because we're closer to them. And I think people are paying a lot more attention to the really great players, in this situation than they have been in the past, if that makes sense to you. I think you know what I mean. There's
I'll tell you another thing, too, about the Raptors. there, you know, generally speaking, you do want a player who you can go to in late game situations who will either score or get fouled. This is the reason why guys like Kawhi and LeBron James are great. The Raptors do present a very interesting challenge to other teams in that they don't really have that guy. It's probably Pascal to start with, but he's not a definitive closer yet. So it does make them, if they're passing the ball, Jeff, and moving around, a very dangerous team. And this is where I'm sort of getting at. They're a dangerous team because every player on that roster, Jeff, now has long, deep playoff experience. And if you look at every player on that roster, at one point last year, they were the focal point of winning a high-pressure playoff game, whether it was Van Vliet against the Bucks and in the finals, whether it was Norm Powell, playoff Powell coming through. Kyle was obviously incredible in the finals. Pascal, game one, the guy looked like one of the great players in the league. Marcus Gasol is always steady. You don't really got to worry about him. So I think they're going to be such a tough out because they don't have guys who feel the moment, and they have no guy on that team like Giannis where there's going to be story after story after story where it's like, can he prove this? There's it's not a great parallel. There's like no Toronto Maple Leaf on the Toronto Raptors. Nobody has to prove themselves on that team. They've done it already.
A reminder that we will have game one on Monday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And pay attention to the schedule next week because there's a ton of games. We're basically writer's block next week when Brent joins me. We're basically pre and post game showing most of the stuff going on.
Who's and Eric Smith and who's Paul Jones?
And we've got a half hour baseball central with Kevin Barker and myself throwing in between a doubleheader. So it's going to be crazy, but it's going to be crazy fun as well. We're looking forward to having all these games on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith had the call of the Raptors 117-109 win over the Denver Nuggets. He will have the call of game one of that playoff series. Eric Smith joins us as Writer's Block continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
There's hockey going on right now. God, there's hockey going on 24-7, isn't there? The Arizona Coyotes and the Colorado Avalanche are tied at 2 in the third period. And the Montreal Canadiens, Richard Deitch, leading the Philadelphia Flyers 3-0. In their first game without head coach Claude Julien, who has returned home to Montreal after having a stent put in, after undergoing a procedure, he is doing fine. He is expected to rejoin the team at some point in the future. It won't be in this series, but, it's always, win one for the Gipper isn't always a storyline that holds true, but it may be in this case because Montreal's been awfully good. Awfully good against Philadelphia, and I thought that was going to be four and out. I thought the Phillies were just going to steamroll them.
Sorry to interrupt you. I was going to say, it looks like that series and the Columbus Tampa Bay series are going long.
Wow, what about that? What about that for Columbus?
Maybe that. I don't know if that makes Leafs fans feel better, but they're just a tremendous team with a capital T.
A reminder that starting Monday, you could score a 70-inch LG UHD TV from Brentview Electronics. Create the best seat in the house right at home with this Bluetooth-capable flat screen. It's got active 4K HDR, ultra surround sound, and much, much more. To enter, collect the secret seats at 7:55, 12:55, and 4:55, and then listen to Tim and Sid to qualify. You can listen in on Monday and find details at sportsnet.ca/590. I can think of no better thing to watch on the 70-inch LG UHD TV than the Toronto Raptors. They will begin their playoff run, and we fully expect it to be a lengthy one, Monday against the Brooklyn Nets. Eric Smith and Paul Jones will have the call of game one in Sportsnet 590 The Fan. They had the call of the Raptors' final seeding game today, a 117-109 win over the Denver Nuggets. We're very pleased to be joined by Eric Smith. Eric, I know you've had a hectic day today. Thanks for taking time out. Thanks for making time for us. So you know, Richard and I, and I think both you and Jonesy talked about this. These past couple of games were sort of, they were an opportunity for players to kind of put their names into Nick Nurse's brain if at some point in the playoffs they're needed. I mean, Norm Powell, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I think we can expect them to play significant roles. Is there anybody else you've seen in this bubble, this run of bubble games for the Raptors, Eric, that you think tonight when Nick Nurse sits down and maybe starts mapping things out, he may go, wow, I might get more time out of this guy than I thought?
I think if there was one guy, and by the way, I just drove past the Go Habs Go billboard on the Gardner Expressway. always funny to see that in Toronto. I think if there's one guy, Jeff, it might be Chris Boucher. At the same time, I don't know if suddenly Nurse is going to completely change his rotation and his allocation of minutes just to accommodate more time for Chris Boucher. I fully anticipate and expect that it will be a shorter bench, a tighter leash come postseason. But when you look at the Raptors and how they're constructed, there is not a lot of depth at that big man position. You've got Ibaka, you've got Gasol, but after that, there's a drop-off. At whether you want to call it the power forward position or the center position, there's not a lot of size there to have that sort of fourth big when you throw Siakam into the mix. I mean, essentially, it comes down to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson playing undersized in the power forward spot, which certainly bodes well in smaller lineup situations when you're matching up against smaller teams. But if you need that other big, I think it's Boucher. And Boucher, I think, as the regular season went on and then certainly this restart went on, I think he's proven more and more and more that, yeah, he might be a little bit skinnier and he might have that smaller frame, but he's put on a little bit of more weight. He's put a little bit more muscle on. He started to become that much more of a defender, not just shot blocker. Certainly hasn't been shy to shoot as a shooter overall, but now starting to develop some sort of a post presence as well and more of an all-round game on the floor. So I think he might be the one guy that I'd say, yeah, there's a little bit more time for him if needed, and the comfort level is certainly there if needed to go to him that much more.
Eric, I don't know if you watched last night's Nets-Blazers game, but as Jeff and I were talking, you had to be unbelievably impressed by the Nets, who were not playing for anything. Their seeding is set, and they pushed the Blazers basically till 90 seconds left. Again, I think the matchup clearly favors the Raptors. They have more talent. They should win. But having watched that game last night, Eric, I don't know if you agree with me, but this is not a team that's just going to basically roll over. The Raptors are going to have to beat the Nets. The Nets aren't just going to show up.
No, I completely agree with you, Richard, and I was listening to you guys as well in the last segment. You're bang on, and I mean, it's scary to think. Forget about even, you know, it's as dumb as it might sound to say, forget about even Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan and other guys on that team that are not available right now for various reasons, COVID-related or otherwise, that they're not a part of this team. It's scary to think how good the Nets actually could or should be, let alone, how good they have been. And they are a team that, and I honestly don't remember which of you said it, but I think there was a foundation that was laid by Kenny Atkinson in terms of how they approach each game, how they play, the professionalism with which they approach each tilt as well. And I think that's been carried over into this restart under Jacques Vaughn as well. And these are a bunch of hungry guys that essentially have nothing to lose. They know they're not expected to win. They know they're not expected to go anywhere. Oh, yeah, we're all waiting for KD and for Irving to come next year and for the Nets to be great next year and in years to come, but not this year. And I think that's kind of a shot in the pride saying, all right, hold on, we're going to go show you. Just like the Phoenix Suns just went and did, going 8-0. And I know they didn't end up making the play-in game or the postseason, but I think there's a certain element of pride when it comes to these teams that have maybe been written off by some folks already saying, no, we're still going to go out there and play hard, and we're going to go show you. And I think that when we look at how well the Nets have played and the type of attitude and approach that they have, there's a lot of fight in that team. And Nick Nurse said it today, guys. I don't know if you heard the comments. And a lot of times, yeah, it's coach speak, but I think he was legit in saying, we're not looking past the Nets. We know that we're going to have a tough opponent, and we're not going to take them lightly. We're going in approaching this saying, hey, we have to be on our game because, as he said for years now, even as reigning champs, we're not good enough to think we can just walk over anybody any given night we're going to prepare for them just as we would prepare for the Clippers, the Lakers, the Bucks, or anybody else. We're going to respect our opponent.
Eric, as we sit here 48 hours, a little more than 48 hours away from the beginning of the playoffs against the Brooklyn Nets, where are the Raptors better at this point? Where are they worse at this point compared to the start of last year's playoff run?
It's a good question. I think that I'll start with where they're worse. I think they're worse in the sense that they don't have the one guy. And I don't know if in the end that ultimately will matter, because they've proven again over the course of this regular season, including the restart, that maybe you don't need that one guy and that they have multiple guys. But there's no denying, and I think you both agree, that as good as Van Vliet was, as good as Lowry was, as good as Siakam was last season, and as good as they all were this season in the regular season, you can't deny the standout individual performances that Kawhi Leonard had last year during the playoffs, and how he proved time and time again to be that guy when the chips were down and you need a bucket or you need a play. It's not to say other guys couldn't do it or wouldn't have done it, but Kawhi did it. And not having that guy in the postseason, will the Raptors be able to continue to rely upon, as they have all year? Well, one night it's this guy, and one night it's that guy, as opposed to it being the same guy every night, every game. And I think that could be maybe where they're worse off, if it ultimately translates into, as well, the inability to make shots, the inability to step up to those moments, and maybe also the inability to get the respect from the officials that we know the superstars tend to get in the NBA. I think they're better off overall in being a more team-oriented club overall, though. And that's to say, not that they weren't tight last year. I think part of what got them to the finals and what got them to the title was the team concept, the family concept element to their squad. But I think it's even deeper this year. I think it's been proven that they aren't just a one-trick pony on the defensive end. They're a good team defense overall. They're not just a team that's going to rely on a starting five with no bench like so many other clubs in the league currently. They're a team that can go deep as well. So I think that overall, I think Raptors this year are constructed from top to bottom better when we factor in the immediate first couple of guys off the bench, let alone the depth overall. And I think that there's even more of a buy-in and a trust and a synergy with their coach and with their coaching staff than there was even last year in a championship year. So I think that's where they might be a little bit of a tick ahead from last season, certainly heading into the playoffs. You could argue they were at that point certainly by the time Game 6 against the Warriors rolled around. But if we're saying going into the playoffs, I think the Raptors are in a better position this year than they were last year.
Eric, obviously this is not a outcome that I think most people expect. But if you look ahead to the second round and you're a Raptors fan, are you not heavily rooting for the Sixers to upset the Celtics?
I think so, yeah. And probably for the same reasons you're thinking, Richard. I think the Raptors obviously have proven themselves against Philadelphia, and it was an extremely difficult matchup last year. And I would argue it was maybe the toughest matchup of the postseason for Toronto last year. I thought the Sixers matched up really well against Toronto, but clearly they have played extremely well against Joel Embiid in the postseason and in the regular season. No Ben Simmons as well, with Jimmy Butler down in Miami now. I'm not as sold on Philly, and wasn't for most of the regular season, even with a healthy Ben Simmons. And I do have my concerns over Boston. And that's not to say that I think the Raptors can't beat them. I think they can. But as I said to Jonesy today on our broadcast, you know, you get that sense with Boston where they've been hanging around now for a couple years. And I know they've sort of switched regimes from Kyrie to now the whole Kemba, Tatum, Brown, Hayward regime and sort of the next chapter in that franchise. But still, a good chunk of that core has been hanging around for a while, and we always look back in history with almost every championship team, with every great team, and say they had to lose before they learned how to win. And you wonder, has Boston learned enough and now's their time? And is the script being written for them to face the reigning champs in round two, and for them to show, yes, we're finally ready to knock off the champs and to begin their reign as one of the elite teams or the team to beat in the East? It's kind of like the script is right there, but are they willing to kind of write that script, or are they going to kind of toss it aside and look for a rewrite yet again? So They make me nervous, and I think they cause some matchup problems for the Raptors with their sort of undersized play, but at the same time, length and athleticism that they still provide, even at that undersized lineup. I think that could cause some issues, and it would be one hell of a matchup that would certainly be entertaining. And it's been a long time coming, finally waiting to see Toronto-Boston in the postseason.
Eric, really good of you to do this. As I said, I know it's been a hectic day. It's going to be a lot of fun next week. Look forward to you and Jonesy having the call of the game. And, again, thanks so much for doing this. Have a great weekend. Rest the pipes. Get serious on Monday.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm sure we'll be talking a lot next week because I heard you guys will be you'll be our pre- and post-game show. So we'll probably be talking a lot. Thanks, JB.
We will be. Take care, Eric. That is Eric Smith, our Raptors radio play-by-play voice on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Again, Monday. Game one, Raptors, Nets. The guys begin to run it back, and we'll have that game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blue Jays baseball tonight. The Jays had yesterday off. They open a three-game series against the Tampa Bay Rays in Buffalo. The Jays lineup is out. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is DHing after an off day. No, I don't get it. Let's see if Ben Wagner does. He's our Blue Jays play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. Ben Wagner joins us. Writer's Block continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Got me feeling like the elephant in every room I'm walking into. Yeah, we started out innocent till I got pulled right into your issue. Yeah,
well, the Montreal Canadiens have now extended their lead over the Philadelphia Flyers to 4-0, while the Colorado Avalanche have snuck ahead of Arizona 3-2 in Edmonton as the Stanley Cup playoffs continue. Blue Jays baseball returns to the airwaves tonight as the Jays begin a series in their home away from home in Buffalo against the Tampa Bay Rays. Ben Wagner will have the call of the game along with Mike Wilner on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So, Ben, I saw the lineup, and unless I misread it, Vlad Jr. is DHing today. Now, this whole when he DHs, when he plays first base, it's going to be a talking point for the rest of the year. It's just the way it is. It's coming off an off day. It's also coming off his worst defensive performance the day before the off day. Understanding that we have not been able, or I have not been able to be on Charlie Montoyo's conference call and or Zoom call. Is there any connection between these things? And you're going to have to explain to me why after my first baseman of the future has a clunker, I don't have him sort of back in the saddle again.
Yeah, I think the vote of confidence for that situation would be to put him back at first base, wouldn't it?
Every manager that I've known would view it that way.
Yeah, I have been confused by a number of lineups this season that the Blue Jays have rolled out there, and I say that from an organization standpoint. This one was a little bit of a question mark. It's an off day. It's, again, a transition to a base that if you're going to play. That's where I'm at. So if you're not going to play him, not only after a day like we had on Wednesday night, struggles defensively, all those things, plus the fact that he has yet to play first base three consecutive days in a row. You know, that's the bigger question for me is if you're going to have this guy play at first base, let him play at first base. I think you only get better by going through the reps, learning on the job, and there are a lot of guys that have to do experiential learning over the course of this year, but making the transition from third base to first base, I didn't think was going to be that big of an obstacle, but I don't think that they're helping Vladimir Guerrero Jr. make this transition either by having him at first base so infrequently.
Ben, the Blue Jays are 6-9, and if you look around the American League, it's kind of weird. Like, you know, not even the Yankees are sort of a juggernaut. They're obviously going to make the playoffs and probably win that division. But my larger point is that, like, it's going to clearly be a weird year with stops and starts. And so if you're Blue Jays management, like, do you think at all about trying to really sort of you know, throw the long ball, so to speak, and go for it. Go for a playoff spot by making some kind of trade. I'm not saying trade one of the core guys, but making some kind of opportunistic trade that gives you a shot to be a 500 or maybe a plus one or two games above 500. Or do you strictly just go at this point, developmental year, we're not gonna do anything. We're gonna give the guys we need opportunity and at bats, and we'll look to proceed really going forward either next year or the year after. How would you proceed if you were them?
I think they build for the future. I think that this season is what it is. They've lost Ken Giles, which if Ken Giles was, and I know Ken Giles got a good report back today. I saw the comments from Charlie Montoyo. But that would have been another piece that the Blue Jays could have actually traded to restock and got really high value at the same time that could have been built for short-term success as of 2021. I just don't think that the organization is in any sort of mindset to make significant moves to make this a big year for the Blue Jays. And it's unfortunate a little bit because they raised their own bar in the conversation with what we were hearing through summer camp and even at the start of this year, even with its struggles, with the expanded playoffs, that raised the expectation within that room. And clearly it raises expectations with a fan base if they hear the players believing in it at the same time. I just don't think the organization is there to make maneuvers to get them into the playoffs this year and see if they can keep the ball rolling into 2021. I think that this year is strictly about getting young players more developed, trying to find out what they have to get into closer of a 162 plan if we are afforded that opportunity in 2021 with coronavirus as it is, and then really take the steps for 2022.
You see, I mean, I think it's pretty simple. It is going to be up to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Nate Pearson to show management how close they are. To me, this year is about both of those guys. And I'm not saying I expect Vladdy to win an MVP award and Nate Pearson to suddenly pitch nine innings every night out and all that. But my goal this year is seeing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. become an everyday first baseman and hit for power and bring his average up a bit. I want to see power. I want him to go up thinking, trying to hit a home run every time. You know, that's kind of simplistic, but I want him going up trying to be a power hitter. The other stuff I'm not worried about. If both of those things happen, if Nate Pearson becomes better and Vladdy Jr. hits more, then I think stuff takes care of itself. Then I think you get to a deadline and you're a game over 500 with both of these guys playing well, and now you're saying, all right, let's see if we can add a commodity that is going to help us next year and the year after that, as well as right now. Because, you know, there are holes in this team, Ben. And there are additions you could make that would, one, put you in a better position to make a run at one of those playoff spots, while also helping you next year, the year after, and the year after that.
They know the holes. I definitely think they know the holes. And I'm agreeing with you on terms of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Nate Pearson being part of the pieces of the puzzle, right, that are going to be the guys that you build around. I just wonder, with what you've seen from Vladdy, are you confident enough that you would take away some pieces in a farm system that you've spent so much time trying to rebuild? Because those are the things that guys are going to knock on the door for, right? The next wave of prospects that are out there. Would you be able, knowing what you've got now and where you think that they're projected, has Vladimir Guerrero Jr. shown you that? I don't think that you can look at this season and even going back to spring training that he has. Nate Pearson, while he was inconsistent in his last start, I thought he was really good in his first start. I really do. I thought he was amped up on the heels of his debut for the encore and trying to blow the ball by people. I think he got a little away from what makes him really, really good when he was facing Atlanta. I'm going to throw away that last start because he just looked like he was mechanically a mess. And that was just, you know, a bad start for a really young player, which you can expect, right? Mm-hmm. I know that the body of work in the minor leagues is not as substantial as what you would have liked for Nate Pearson. But for me, that was also by design. They manipulated his innings and his starts, especially over the last couple of years where it was two, and then we would be allowed to throw five. where he never had to really pitch when he had bad games. This was his first run at not being able to dominate, not being able to fight through adversity, because he had never done it in the minor leagues. The way that they were manipulating his innings and his availability over the last couple of years. So I expected Nate Pearson to have some struggles at the major league level and not just be this lights out person. Now, it's still electric. Don't get me wrong. Everything that we've seen, fastball, velocity is there. The slider is as advertised. The changeup has come so far for him. And a lot of people that I talk to in the game, too, feel that changeup is a plus pitch when he is as good as he can be. And the question for me is now, can he bounce back from that? Can he replicate that? And we're still waiting on the consistent returns from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So I don't think they're there yet, if you boil it down to those two guys.
Ben, one last quick one for me. Not much time here. But, you know, the interesting thing about Ryan Borucki is, and I saw the piece today on Sportsnet, like, I kind of like the idea of him as Andrew Miller light. And I know he probably wants to start, and I know there's more money there, but that's, you know, this season may provide a pretty interesting position for Ryan Borucki. What do you think?
I love this season for Ryan Borucki. I love this splash. The Blue Jays had so much concern about whether or not he would be durable enough going into the regular season. All right, so COVID happens. Now you've got this small pocket of size. Let the guy go out and air it out. Where you don't have a need right now in terms of the rotation, you love what you've seen from Anthony Kay. You've loved what you've seen from Thomas Hatch. There's not a need to have Ryan Borucki stretched out. He is the best piece for this ball club right now in the role that he's been given. I'm totally fine with that. I think it's really exciting for Ryan Borucki. And you can stretch a guy out like Ryan Borucki, if he's healthy, at any time. You know, he's retooled his body. His repertoire is what it is, and it's almost gotten better, addition by subtraction, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I'm really liking this role for Ryan Borucki, and I'm totally fine with him moving from a multi-inning guy that would have a need to be stretched out all the way to maybe a left-handed specialist to get that third out in an inning and then roll him right back. He's a guy that can go after one inning or three batters, or he can ask it five outs. His stuff's that good because that changeup still plays against right-handed hitters.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you exactly. I think Ryan Borucki is ready for a much more. Well, he's already in a significant role, but you know, let's see what happens with Ken Giles. But at this point, I want to see Ryan Borucki. I want him to become a top choice out of the bullpen. I want the situation created for him, not necessarily have him, you know, create his own situation. I think we've seen enough of that. As always, Ben, we appreciate your time. You and Michael have the call of the game tonight. First pitch is at 6:30. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Richard. Have a good one.
Take care. Blue Jays and Rays tonight, Sportsnet 590. The Fan and Sportsnet 1. Trevor Richards on the mound for the Rays. Tanner Roark on the mound for the Blue Jays. Of course, there will be NHL hockey as well tonight. Islanders and Capitals, Stars and Flames, Canucks and Lightning. Tim and Sitter next. Mark Spears joins the boys. So does Kevin Barker. Lots of baseball talk ahead for Richard Deitch and all of us. Here at Writer's Block, I'm Jeff Blair. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.